Hey guys, what's going on? Ken here, the traveler on the Eldridge Path. I want to give you a little heads up. We have a new forum to discuss our episodes. It's the Learning Lovecraft fan page on Facebook. Over here, we can discuss prior and upcoming episodes. You could even submit requests for Cyclopean Cinema episodes. And if you're coming along for the ride for the first time, just like me, or you're a seasoned vet with Lovecraft stuff, it's all there for all of us. So come on, join us for the conversation, and I'll see you on the other side of sleep.
On July 16, 1923, I moved into Exham Priory after the last workman had finished his labors. The restoration had been a stupendous task, for little had remained of the deserted pile, but a shell-like ruin. Yet because it had been the seat of my ancestors, I let no expense deter me. The place had not been inhabited since the reign of James I, when a tragedy of intensely hideous, though largely unexplained, nature had struck down the master of five of his children and several servants, and driven forth under a cloud of suspicion and terror the third son, my lineal, progenitor, and the only survivor of the abhorred line. With this sole heir denounced as a murderer, the estate had reverted to the crown, nor had the accused man made any attempt to exculpate himself or regain his property. Shaken by some horror greater than that of conscience or the law, and expressing only a frantic wish to exclude the ancient edifice from his sight and memory, Walter de la Poer, 11th Baron Exham, fled to Virginia and there founded the family which by the next century had become known as Delapore.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Learning Lovecraft. I'm your host, Jason McKittrick, and joining me, as always, the traveler of the Eldridge Path, Mr. Ken James.
That's Mr. Ken James the First.
James the First. I got it. I got you. Okay. So you're a part of this family, maybe.
No.
Tonight, as with every night, we're going to be delving into the world of H.P. Lovecraft's cosmic horror. Our focus tonight, the rats in the walls.
Boy, oh boy.
So Ken, the cat.
Yeah, the cat. Daniel the cat? That was his name?
So, yeah, we're just going to get this out of the way right in the beginning. So, editions from the 1950s onward for a while renamed him as Black Tom, and that's what we're going to go with.
All right, Black Tom. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to a reading of this on my way down, like I always do after reading it.
Unedited,
and I was like, whoa! Mm-hmm. I was on the boulevard going through Philly, and I was like, no, let's just turn this down.
And put the windows up.
Yeah. Guess we're not smoking cigarettes on this journey.
Guess not. It's in here, and so we don't have to just, you know, when we get to it, have to, like, halt and then have the discussion. Mm-hmm. It's not a great name that he named his cat. Many people have discussed this already. This was named after Lovecraft's cat as a child, apparently. So the cat would have been named by his father, apparently. I don't know the whole story, but, you know, it's old New England racist names, and we're just going to sidestep it and call him Black Tom.
And isn't the character supposed to be kind of like a Confederate, you know?
Oh, we're going to get there.
So you can kind of see.
I was just going to call him Mr. Wrong Side of History.
Yeah. There you go.
Before we get going, this gentleman gets a last name, but not a first name.
So, yeah, he's not totally unnamed.
Right. I was going to go with Graham.
I like Graham for this. Graham's good.
So Graham Delapore?
Graham Delapore, that is a that's a sturdy name.
It's a sturdy. It's sturdy. Name,
stout fellow.
Speaks of the colonies, but also has that you know, hoity-toityness a little bit.
Yeah, a little.
I thought it was
a little hoity-toity. It's like the edge of a wooden table, kind of. You know.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I was thinking more crackers, but yeah, that's Graham crackers.
But when you split a Graham cracker.
Yeah. Ah. Okay. Okay. Take. Smooth, but then when you really start to look on the inside, you get all grainy. This really grainy, rough stuff. Yeah. Kind of like what we're going to get in this story.
Yeah. Rough stuff indeed.
All right. So, a little particulars before. This was written in August to September of 1923 and then was first published in Weird Tales of March of 1924. So, this was a Weird Tales edition. Good stuff. The cover's pretty interesting, too. It's in one that has Harry Houdini on the cover, which is fun. Him trying to break out of some chains.
Yeah.
It's good times.
Yeah?
Yeah. All right, Ken. So in July of 1923, an American named Delapore, we've named Graham, the last descendant of the Delapore family, moved to his ancestral estate of Exham Priory in England after extensive renovations. So he gives us that right in that that beginning quote. We get that whole, you know, that whole snapshot of what's going on there.
Right, and like as I'm reading... it's a longer one,
yes.
And he kind of gets flowy with the words again, and he starts, you know, spinning a bit. A
little bit.
So I'm like, wait, where the hell am I?
It's definitely nested, and you definitely get a lot of information. There's some paragraphs where it's like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, I was like,
yeah.
Okay.
I hadn't reread this one in a long time. I'm very familiar with the story. It's one that gets referenced a lot. They call it one of Lovecraft's first great stories. We discussed this earlier. The two of us really think Music of Eric Zahn probably belongs in there first before this. But
I love that story.
Oh, yeah. But this one really gets into the nitty-gritty of it, like, really. So, you know.
My man was running with themes. He's got concepts going. Nyarlathotep shows up.
Nyarlathotep does show up. Son of a bitch. We'll talk about that, too. So, and folks, if you're drinking anything, cheers. All right. Unlike Howard, we like to drink.
Yeah, we partake in the libations.
We do partake in the spirits. So, the Exham Priory, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
We get a good description of this right off the bat. And he tells us about this is a mix of different architectural styles, like very strange. The foundation... was very singular. He's saying that it's merged onto the one side of the solid limestone of this precipice kind of like cliff thing, mm-hmm. right? Near the ocean. And then on the other side, the priory overlooked this desolate valley that's like 3 miles west of the village of Anchester, which is the closest town. So there's 3 miles in between that little town and this essential, you know, haunted castle on the hill.
Almost if it was built there by design.
Almost. It's in a weird spot.
It is.
Almost if they knew weird things went on there.
Yeah.
And
yes, they did.
They did. And he even remarks that architects and antiquarians love to examine this building because it's just so weird. But the country folk hate it.
Yes, they do. Sorry. Just waking up, gang.
All right, yeah. Get that funny in you.
Yeah, I'm getting the funny juices going.
But he tells us right away, we get right in this next paragraph, that workmen have blown it up. So we're going into it knowing, oh, shit, this is, you know, a Lovecraftian story where the house on the hill is not a good place to go? All right.
There was a lot of his themes going in this one.
Yeah.
Which I just got lost in the sauce at points.
Yeah.
I'm like,
this is dense. This is a dense...
Very dense.
...piece of writing. And... You know, we're going to pick it apart, so, you know, we'll get to it. And I can see how there could be some confusion because the names, the changing, the spelling of the last names, the first names. But we get a little, we're told of how there's this sealed envelope that was passed between generation to generation of his forebears. And in this sealed envelope was some secret that everybody knew. Almost like how the president passed, say, you know, has all the nuke launch codes, where the shapeshifters are.
Or it's like
Area 57, Area 51.
Your descendants of monkey creatures.
Close. We're actually close. Think about it in this story. So he tells us about his grandfather, who is advanced in years. He perished in this this big fire that engulfed his home in Virginia. And he tells about how this was during the Civil War. And we even get this full passage where he's talking about how, like, you know, he even calls them federal soldiers, not the Union. It's like, wow, buddy. Women screaming. And that his father was in the army defending Richmond. It's like, you guys just couldn't get it right, huh?
Yeah.
And he talks about how there's all these formalities and that his mother and him were passed in the lines to join him.
Yeah.
But when the war ended, they all moved north. It's like, of course you did.
Mm-hmm.
Like rats.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Like rats from the flames.
Indeed. So he, you know, the fast forward kind of thing. He grows into manhood. They move up to Massachusetts. I'm thinking Boston.
I would say so.
Yeah. But because of this, they feel like they've been cut off from their ancestry. He doesn't know anything about his past because this envelope that should have been passed on to his father from his grandfather was lost.
Yes.
And it can only be, at this point, speculated what was in there. You know, I mean, it could just be some stupid stuff. Oh, here's account numbers. It's just the high school S.
Yeah.
That is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
They just open up to like sick.
And
they just close it. Like, yeah. They're like, what was it? It's like, only the patriarchs can know.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And as he's talking about this, he comes to the realization. He's like, you know, if I had known where my story was going to end up, I would have just left it all alone. I would have stayed here,
mm-hmm.
and I would have just left Exham Priory to its moss, bats, and cobwebs.
That's how you want to leave a place. If you don't want to, you know, if you don't want to open up a bag of snakes.
It's true, man. So his father, Graham's father, we're going with Graham. I don't know his father's name, but it doesn't matter. He's dead. And he fought for the Confederacy, yeah. So fuck him.
Yeah.
he dies in 1904, and obviously with no message to leave him or to his child, Alfred, who they just mentioned in passing, is a motherless boy of 10. So yeah. He had a wife at some point, maybe, and he just...
Are you saying the boy was born of the Force?
Well, it says mother... I mean, you know what? It doesn't say he wasn't.
Never think of that?
Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know.
So he's Anakin Skywalker, this kid.
So, yeah, right. Yeah. Of cannibals.
Yeah.
So because he has this this son, Alfred, you know, he talks about how he goes off to war, all right? And it's England, 1917, and he becomes this aviation officer. And when he's over there in England, he happens to be in this area of Anchester. And he buddies up with this guy, Captain Edward Norris, who will be... will be important later. And he starts to hear stories about when they find out that he's a Delapore, that they're like, you're a Delapore? He's like, well, yeah, I'm from the United States. But they're like, oh... there's all these really weird stories
yeah.
about your family. And some peasants, like, would not even talk to him. They were just like, oh, you're a Delapore?
No, thank you.
No, thank you. So because of this, this kind of ignites the interest in Graham, the father. And he's like, you know what? I'm just going to buy it. Sight unseen. And I love the details because Howard's like, let's get to the shit. So he just let's get to the horror.
Yeah.
So like a rat digging.
Lots of rat references.
Oh yeah, it's going to be there. So he shows it to Alfred. Alfred kind of like, you know, tells the father. They work with Norris's uncle owns the place. So they're able to get a surprisingly reasonable figure.
Mm.
And he buys it. He buys Exham Priory in 1918.
For $300.
Probably. Which was a bit expensive, but, yeah. You know, I knew I needed it.
Had to splurge.
Yeah. But we get the first, which I found kind of interesting for this. I mean, I see the literary device, but he makes it very human right at the beginning. He buys this. He buys Exham Priory in 1918, but immediately can't go and restore it because his son returns from war as a maimed invalid.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
Is sad,
but then 2 years he takes care of him, does nothing but care for him, and then even places his business under the direction of partners. So he's just taking care of him, and come 1921, his son is dead. So if you think about this guy, he kind of like is existing in like genealogical limbo.
Right.
His past is gone. His future is gone. It's just him. And this line is over. He's already an old guy. Yeah. So it's just him in this house. It's him in this awful ancestry.
Yeah.
Because doesn't have a wife. They didn't really mention that.
Yeah.
And the kid, he passed. And this here he suggests that he's in his later years. I mean, if the kid was old enough to be at war, let's say this guy's in his 50s, late 50s, maybe even early 60s. Who knows?
Yeah, he mentions it. He's like, I went from young man to
right.
middle age to being an old boy now.
Right. Right. So he tells us that, you know, come 1921, after his boys passed, he finds himself to be bereaved and aimless. Retired, like you said, a retired manufacturer, no longer young, I resolved to divert my remaining years with my new possession. So this is it for him.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing left for him. This is the only thing that even holds any kind of, like, connection for him.
It's his only passion project.
Yeah.
He's going to pour it all into this place.
Yeah. It's a bit of a distraction, and obviously, we know we're reading a horror story, so this was, when this part happens, I was starting to think, it was like, well, he's in that position of horror antagonist, or a protagonist, excuse me, where they go into the situation already wounded or mm-hmm. sick or weak, and they're going into the situation not at their full faculties, you know what I mean? Like
Howard did it first.
Sure, probably. So he's the bereaved guy. I mean, let's go back
yeah.
to, you know, I mean, I don't know how many people have seen it, but we talked about it in session 9. He shows up, you know, and at the end of the movie, the demon Simon is like, I live in the weak and the wounded.
Yeah.
So he's going in there already not, he's just not ready to handle this already.
Yeah, that's a trope, but just, you know, they like to do that, just, you know, some
yeah.
broken woman with, like, their kid, the husband died, or, like,
right.
vice versa, you
yeah.
know. Then the spookiness starts to happen at the house. Or
yeah, there's another one. It's with George C. Scott. It's, what is that one
Changeling?
Called? Yes, The Changeling. Because, like, right in the beginning, like the wife and daughter die, don't they?
Yeah, in
yeah.
car accident.
Yeah, so it's like that kind of, mm-hmm. that's where we're at. We are yep. George C. Scott in this story. A lot less yelling, but
he's such a badass in that movie.
He really is. It's a great movie. Folks, if you haven't seen it, check it out.
Also, go see our favorite ghost movie episode of Other Dangerous Podcast.
Uh-huh. So, he visits Anchester in December, and he's entertained by this Captain Norris, a plump, amiable young man, who was, they said he thought much of his son, so I don't know if he was a commanding officer or if they were just friends.
Played by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Exactly. See?
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
And he gets, he kind of like helps him out, gathering the plans, and then guide in the coming restoration. Because as he's trying to hire guys to restore this place, the locals, they're not going to help. And then workmen will show up and like start working, and the locals are like, don't you know anything about this place?
Yeah.
And they'll whisper in there, and then they just leave. So he
yeah.
kind of needs a little bit of help to keep people to finish it up.
One thing,
yeah.
This is going to be the biggest cast of characters we've had
yeah,
so far.
Yeah.
As they come up, we'll just throw the actors mm-hmm. out. We won't save it. So we have
yep.
George C. Scott,
yep.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Boom. The son, let's give somebody, like, random. Let's make it Tobey Maguire.
Okay, I was thinking maybe Tom Hanks' son, Colin Hanks.
Okay, okay.
Because he's, like, not big enough, but he's got, like, a likable face. So you feel bad for him, and then you just toss him away?
I'm into that, because I already have the one guy who helps open up the crypt, the guy who's,
the doctor, like the...
Yeah, that's the dude who, in, he's in King Kong. He plays he plays the captain of the ship, the German guy. He plays every German guy ever.
The guy, okay, yeah, all
yeah.
right.
He kind of has this adventuring look that I kind of dig, but we'll get to
I
that.
I got you, he's grizzled, I get you. Yeah, we'll cover that
yeah.
when we get there.
Yeah. So, Graham, our boy Graham, he's looking into the history of this place, and he figures out that that Exham Priory, as it's known today, stood on the site of this prehistoric temple. And he can't even place it. He's saying it's Druid, or maybe even before the Druids. And it may even be contemporary with Stonehenge. Like, it's old. Whatever this site is that where they started, it's old.
And they may do things here like they did at Stonehenge.
Right, because
well.
He even says that indescribable rites had been celebrated there. And there's a talk about that there was a transference of the rites, meaning that this worship of Cybele, who is this Roman goddess. We're not going to get into the particulars of it, but he's giving us the idea that blood sacrifice, weird shit happened here.
Cats and dogs living together.
They tried to, yeah, this is where they tried to summon Gozer, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised if you look into the records and that Evo Shando, Shore's ancestor, was probably left there.
If you look into the records, when writing Ghostbusters, this story's open on Danny Ack's desk.
It's possible. It's possible.
I like to think that's what happened.
Yeah, yeah. So he even takes a look. There's some of these, we have these inscriptions that he sees that also refer to this Magna Mater, which is this dark worship that was forbidden to Roman citizens, and it's this mother goddess of some kind. You know, it's some dark stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not even what it is originally. It's just been called something else over the centuries.
Yeah, I'm starting to like get the idea here that like this place must have been known by many a name.
Yeah, like this was a travel spot, you know what I mean? Like, and it wasn't just for like maybe during the Roman era it was like, okay, that's over there, you know, the Roman soldiers were like, they would, you know, be like, "All right, are you a Roman citizen? Yeah, you're not going over there."
I'm picturing like the Enna from Dusk Till Dawn.
Okay. Oh, the back of the pyramid. Yeah, sure. Sure, that's kind of, yeah. So this Temple of Cybele, as they call it, was, they say that it was splendid and thronged with worshippers who performed nameless ceremonies.
Throngs, there it
is. At the bidding of a Phrygian priest. So, which is just to say, weird stuff that even the Romans didn't know what was going on.
Balls were getting wild out there.
Yeah, it was getting weird. Like,
wild
there was,
balls.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of bonfires, you know, blood Flowy sacrifice roads. By the full moon, the whole thing.
Daggers.
Yep. He pulls up these mentions and chronicles at about 1000 AD. It's mentioned in a chronicle as being a substantial stone priory housing a strange and powerful monastic order and surrounded by extensive gardens which needed no walls to exclude a frightened populace. So nobody went in there because they were afraid of the place.
Yeah.
And there was this monastic order that was, you know, some kind. It's everything, man.
You're just seeing torches nightly.
Yeah. Yep.
You know?
Yep.
People chanting.
Yep. Covered carriages.
Spooky stuff.
It's, you know, it's wild. Screams in the night. The whole thing.
Horses neighing.
Yep. So, here's...
A random goat.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Poor goat.
Maybe.
Tyrannosaurus Rex eats it. I don't know.
Everything...
I wasn't there.
Wait till we get to the weird shit. Because we're not even at the weird shit yet. So here's where we get introduced to Gilbert de la Poor, right? This guy was the first Baron of Exham, and he was granted title to the Exham Priory by Henry III in 1261. And before this time, there was no evil connected to the family before this point. But within 50 years of this guy showing up as this named Baron of Exham, we're already getting a chronicle where he's referred to as the de la Poors as Cursed of God.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. That's almost like Dracula.
Yeah, and he deemed society too sick to survive. and then we get, this great next passage.
Of my family before this date, there is no evil report, but something strange must have happened then. In one chronicle, there is a reference to a de la Poire as cursed of God. In 1307, whilst village legendary had nothing but evil and frantic fear, to tell of the castle that went up on the foundations of the old temple and priory. The fireside tales were of the most grisly description, all the ghastlier because of their frightened reticence and cloudy evasiveness. They represented my ancestors as a race of hereditary demons, beside whom Gilles de Retz and the Marquis de Sade would seem the various tyros, and hinted whisperingly at their responsibility for the occasional disappearance of villagers through several generations.
Yeah, so this place became the haunted house on the hill.
Yeah.
And I like that they compare them to Gilles de Rais and Marquis de Sade. Are you familiar with either of those guys?
Marquis de Sade sounds familiar. I know what it is, I just can't.
He was a depraved poet. Got into a lot of... He wrote about very depraved sexual acts.
Well, I know him from, like, a movie or something.
It's called Quills.
Okay.
It's with Jeffrey Rush.
Okay.
Kate Winslet.
Yeah.
It's a wild movie. Gilles de Rais, he was actually friends with Joan of Arc. And it's weird, but he was accused of, like, witchcraft and, like, butchering children and, like, all this crazy shit. They made this big, there's this huge, it's very well documented. There was this big court case back in the day where he was accused of all these things, and they put him to death. Very interesting character. Apparently,
not like Joan of Arc, who was put to death for wearing men's clothes.
And other things. I like the version of the movie where Dustin Hoffman plays the devil. Did you ever see that one?
Is that the one with, what's her name?
Multipass?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I saw that.
Good times. They cut him out of the movie. He was there helping her during that war, Gilles de Rais, the guy who was killing thousands of peasants and shit in his basement.
They were like, at the devil.
Yeah, at the devil, yeah, sure. So then we're told about that the worst characters in the family line, though, apparently were the barons and their direct heirs, right? So it's the aristocrats of this family now that get passed down from this line of the Exum barons.
All the entitled ones.
The ones who have titles, literally. Yeah. They're the ones who you hear about. And he tells us also that if a kid was born and he was like, you know, I'm not into this, they would just mysteriously die. And be replaced by someone else in the family that would be, you know, more into whatever they may be into.
Yeah.
It's just money, guys. They're not doing anything weird.
Sure.
Yeah. Guys, it's trickle-down economics. Just let them do what they're going to do. Sorry.
Trickle-down economics. It's a little, I don't know, trickle-down perversion is what this seems like.
Yeah. Kind of close to real life, maybe. I don't know. Bohemian Grove. So there seemed to be an inner cult in the family, presided over by the head of the house, and sometimes this was closed except to a few members. So like there's like a cult within the family itself. Right. So you could be a Delaporte, but you may not know about any of this stuff.
You're not in the inner circle.
Right, you're not in the inner circle. Because if you're like, oh, there's Teddy, he's simple. He's not going to know about it. But like, here's my firstborn son, Dr. Delaporte. Yeah. He's in there. He always has blood on his shirt for some reason.
He likes to go to the corpses and just bat it around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's his thing. Yep. Then he eats it. sorry, did I jump the gun? And then we get a couple anecdotes about some of these people. We get Lady Margaret Trevor of Cornwall, who married Godfrey Delaporte, second son of the 5th Baron of Exham. I wonder why you got confused here, Ken. Probably in the 14th or 15th century.
At this point, I blacked out.
Yeah, I know. Her description in the story vaguely resembles that of the historical Countess Bathory, kind of. Because they talk about how she's this, she became this favorite bane of children all over the countryside, and the demon heroine of a particularly horrible old ballad not yet extinct near the Welsh border.
I was just talking about Mary Bathory last Saturday.
Yeah.
Huh, that's funny.
Elizabeth Bathory.
Well, the Bloody Mary story, they've crossed those streams.
Oh, because that's Mary, Queen of Scots.
Exactly, but they do, there's actually a story, it was a book that I read.
Oh, was there?
It's called Mary Bathory, yeah.
It was like an incarnation kind of thing, like reincarnation?
Yes.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I like that. Fun times.
Yeah, and then it also spun it into that being Bloody Mary and the whole saying in the mirror.
Hell yeah. You could see where they were going with this, though, because it's like, she was like, oh, watch out for, you know, Lady Trevor, or Lady Delaporte, whatever she was going as. Because, you know, they were like, oh, kids disappear near the castle.
I have such a vision of this woman.
Yeah.
Kind of spindly.
Yeah.
Long wearing, just like the robe, just gross.
Mm-hmm.
Really, like, emaciated.
But wearing the finery still.
Tilda Swinton.
Okay. I could see that. I like it. And there's still stories to this day that they still whisper about, you know, the old Lady Delaporte and whatever she did.
Gross.
Yeah, just that in there. That's a story right there. And I love it.
Because there's a lot, there is a lot of, you know, a lot of meat in this one, man.
I know, man. And here's my here's one of my favorite ones. They talk about another similar, this is Lady Mary Delaporte, who she gets married to the Earl of Shrewsfield, and then he kills her, him and his mother kill her. And they get absolved immediately by the priest to whom they confess it to because they're happy about it because these Delaporte's are just shunned.
She's
I want to know what happened.
Drinking a baby's head, like a severed baby's head.
Yeah. Shortly after the marriage. So I'd love to know, like, did they walk in? Did she attack him and try to do something to him?
She couldn't, like, keep it. She couldn't maintain. And just, like, it hit her, you know?
This story, this is another one that can be turned into, like, a 6-part Netflix series.
Oh, sure.
Like, you could just focus on one of these ones for, like, an episode.
Yeah.
Amazing. Start the series off with them blowing up the Exham Priory.
Yeah.
Him on his deathbed.
Yeah.
Him in the insane asylum. Or whatever.
Yeah, him just saying all those fucking crazy words.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. So, our boy Graham, he hears all these superstitions and stuff, and he hates it. He's like, come on, really? This is my family? Like, he gets over there, and you could tell he's like, And everywhere he goes, it's persistent. And everyone he goes to, that the whole line of his ancestors, he finds it to be especially annoying.
He's like, haven't I been through enough? Can I just not have a crazy ancestry?
But you can kind of tell that maybe he's like, all right, well, I'm here. I'm, you know, I'm restoring the place. I'm going to set it right. You know, I'm a good guy.
Yeah.
I would never eat somebody.
I would never drink the head of an infant.
No. Why would you?
I don't know. No. But these people, obviously.
I wouldn't go through the humiliation ritual.
Yeah, you ain't putting me through that.
No way. Anyway.
I'm not wearing a dress.
No. Not presenting at the Oscars naked. And then they put a kind of a dress on you.
Yeah.
Sorry. Everyone knows what's up.
Yeah. if you don't, get in the know.
But then you hear about all these monstrous habits and all this crazy stuff. And then we get to the scandal of one of his immediate forebears. The case of his cousin, young Randolph Delaporte.
Young Randolph.
Of Carfax, which Carfax, Dracula.
Yeah.
He had to put it in here.
Carfax
in here
Abbey, separate. Baby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And this is one of his ancestors that lived in Virginia, who went among the Negroes and became a voodoo priest after he returned from the Mexican War. That sounds awesome.
Isn't that from Taboo?
Kinda. It's like a mix between like Taboo and Serpent in the Rainbow.
Touche.
So this character was Bill Pullman.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Circle gets a square.
The President of the United States, Bill Pullman?
Yeah. No. Serpent in the Rainbow, okay. Bill Pullman.
Not the girl's dad from Casper, Bill Pullman. Paranormal psychiatrist.
No, this guy is. This guy wouldn't be. The guy from Casper would not be able to handle this shit.
You're right.
You know what I'm saying?
You're right. I know. You're absolutely right.
All right. I'd hand it to Christina Ricci before I'd hand it to him in that movie.
Touche.
Yeah. Anyway, so we get this next wonderful passage.
Can I keep you?
I'm sorry.
I was much less disturbed by the vaguer tales of wails and howlings in the barren, windswept valley beneath the limestone cliff of the graveyard stenches after the spring rains, of the floundering, squealing white thing on which Sir John Clave's horse had trod one night in a lonely field, and of the servant who had gone mad at what he saw in the priory in the full light of day. These things were hackneyed spectral lore, and I was at that time a pronounced skeptic. The accounts of vanished peasants were less to be dismissed, though not especially significant in view of medieval custom. Prying curiosity meant death and more than one severed head had been publicly shown on the bastions, now effaced around Exham Priory.
Okay. We're going to read a little thing here that we just heard the passage of. Of the floundering, squealing white thing on which Sir John Clave's horse had trod one night in a lonely field. Wendigo riff. What
so
the fuck?
Some kind of creature gets a horse just steps on it.
I see it cinematically though. You know what I mean? Like he's doing his thing, and then all of a sudden, and you look down, and there's just like classic '80s, like just nasty, practical effects, just disgusting mass of flesh.
And then the horse tramples it. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, like it hits it, and he's like, "What the hell?" And then he's just like. Makes it go down again.
And he has it rear up.
Yeah,
and
he rears up and smashes it. Yeah.
I was picturing like he's trotting, you know, and he's like a lord. He's like, and all of a sudden it's just like, you know, and he's like,
he looks down. What the hell? And it's like,
yeah, as you said, he just doesn't. He just, and just keeps going. You know,
I like it.
Disgusting. The rain will take care of it.
Yeah, and then he gets back. Servant, serf, whatever. Clean my horse's shoes.
Yeah.
He needs to be reshod.
All right, Maurice. And he pets the horse as he walks away.
Maurice? Crazy old Maurice. Sorry. So, yeah, I mean, this place, man, this is it.
Yeah.
I mean, this place has got it going on. And we get this next little part where we hear about these tales where it's like, they try to give you the idea of the place, and like they have like you know, that it's like it's the sweeping area, and it's got, you know, he kind of compares it to some of these myths that he heard when he was a kid. And for instance, he said that also that there's a belief that a legion of bat-winged devils kept witches' Sabbath each night at the priory, a legion whose sustenance might explain the disproportionate abundance of coarse vegetables harvested in the vast gardens.
Now, I know we're going to get to it.
Yeah.
his nightmares.
Yeah.
Do we think those things were real?
Those things are real?
Like the winged demon creatures?
No. No.
Right, so he's just having nightmares about all the stories that he's told? Because I'm thinking, like, at this point, maybe something's...
Let's wait, because all of this is like a rich tapestry.
I have questions!
Right. We'll get to the question portion, but the folks listening don't know where we're at yet. We're building the story here.
This is about me.
The journey of Ken.
Yeah.
No, so this... The coarse vegetables. That's, you know, we know later. It's like, well, what is that for? So... If you have peasants around the area and they're like, what is this for? And they already think the place is haunted,
yeah,
or whatever it is, they're gonna like, oh, they must use it for demons to eat.
That's,
you know?
That's a cool like visual effect too. You see this big haunted house, yeah, lush vegetation, it's just on the side,
yeah,
and then there's just pumpkins and gourds everywhere, mm-hmm, you know?
Yeah. I like it.
I like it too.
I love it, actually. All right, so we have another passage here.
And most vivid of all, there was the dramatic epic of the rats. The scampering army of obscene vermin which had burst forth from the castle 3 months after the tragedy that doomed it to desertion. The lean, filthy, ravenous army which had swept all before it and devoured fowl, cats, dogs, hogs, sheep, and even two hapless human beings before its fury was spent. Around that unforgettable rodent army, a whole separate cycle of myths revolves, for it scattered among the village homes and brought curses and horrors in its train.
Now, at this point,
yeah,
all these years, these different, you know, generations of these families, like, yep, no one gathered up a posse?
Well, no, because if you think about it, if these are just like serfs in the field, just doing whatever they do, and you have this powerful family out of this, you know, at Eden East, where there's like, you know, light spewing from it, and you know, you see like parasailing and you hear loud music.
You gotta think though that like there's at least one Billy Badass out there that has a silver tongue.
There was, but they tell you that people who got too close or stuck their face in there, the neck, you would see heads on the ramparts.
Right, but they didn't go in with enough.
I mean, yeah, but you were talking about, like, medieval peasantry. They couldn't arm themselves. It's just not going to happen. I mean, and these are, you know, this is, at the time, it's a big priory, so it's a fortified thing. It's got, they ain't getting in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't have the manpower. And if they're crazy superstitious or very religious and they think that there's demons there, yeah, they're like, you know what, I'm just going to plow my field.
Not worth my time.
Yep. I already lost 4 kids. We got 3 more. I'm sure we won't lose all of them.
It's unbelievable.
And then the rats come out.
But, you know, it is based on, like, actual people were like this, you know? Like, people,
yeah,
were scared of places, and
yeah,
they just let themselves get thrown around.
Yeah.
No, didn't. U.S. of A. These,
yeah,
colors don't run.
I mean, they did. The Delapores ran. All of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's, you know...
Proud to be...
Jesus Christ. All right.
Sorry, the funny juice is flowing now.
Oh, no, it's all good. No, man, I think that it's... I mean, when we get to this rat thing, because think about it. You're someone on the outside. You're
right.
You're one of these peasants. You don't know what the fuck's going on. And then all this weird shit has happened, and then one day a deluge of rats just comes out of that place. You wouldn't know what the hell's going on. People are getting eaten. 2 people get eaten. And at the end of it, you're like, what the fuck was that? And I think that's the whole thing with this, is just like, it's this whole peasantry that is completely unaware of what's going on. Yeah, people are disappearing. They're like, oh, werewolves, ghosts, whatever the hell it might be.
Yeah.
And then the rats come out, because they're like, who had rats for, you know, for 1,000?
At this point, though, too, I just want to go off like and say that I think all that stuff was there.
Okay.
Werewolves, ghosts.
All right. Sure.
All of them were there.
Sure. We can go that route, too.
We can. And that's where...
All right.
In my heart of hearts.
Yeah.
It's not just rats.
Well, I think there's an argument for that, and we'll get to it when we get to the end. After this, our boy Graham says something interesting, which I think is a little tip of the hat here. He says, "It must not be imagined for a moment that these tales formed my principal psychological environment." Typical unreliable narrator kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So because he's saying that, it means the opposite. So all these tales are getting to him. They're in there. He's in a bereaved state. Probably tired.
Probably.
probably had enough of these limeys. I don't know.
Sorry to our listeners, and
nobody's listening.
Yeah. Our stats don't sound good.
So that's what I think. I mean, right there, we get the little Lovecraft gives us that little tip of the hat where it's like, all right. So, and this kind of informs what's going to happen later. Cut to, restoration's finished.
No cut to. Sorry.
Right. The restoration goes swimmingly. All right. The place looks amazing, and it's returned to like its basically its original medieval beauty.
He's got his own wing. He's sleeping.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. A little
tower,
minaret looking thing. Yeah. But while this is taking place, he tells us that before he gets back, he stayed with the Norris family, and he did a little bit of further research into his genealogy, and he tells us about the 11th Baron of Exham. And we get the backstory here, that he killed all of the other family members of his family with the help of four servants about 2 weeks after making a shocking discovery.
That's all it took was four servants. Five-man team could have wiped these people out. But I guess from the inside.
This was SEAL Team 6. They went through a wormhole. I don't know.
Look, I'm not putting anything past this story.
makes this shocking discovery and then fled to Virginia. Probably in the 17th century. This guy is the ancestor of the American Delapores and is the only Delapore not hated by the people of Anchester, who kind of revere him as like this hero because he did this great thing. And he's remembered as this shy, gentle youth, but later has this, what Lovecraft calls, harassed and apprehensive way about him. Right. So he was kind of withdrawn because he must have seen something.
You know what I think he walked in on?
What do you think?
It was like in Bram Stoker's Dracula, mm-hmm. the wolf fuck scene.
Mm.
That's what he walked in on.
But 100 of them.
Yeah, yeah. And he was just like, "Got to go."
He's like, "No," and then that was just the first room.
Yeah, right.
That was just on the first level. That was like, "You're afraid of this?" He's like, "There's 100 more levels. Yeah. Each gets worse."
The next room, they're all just watching news.
Yeah.
And he's like, "We can't do this. This is too much.
Don't do this to us. He's also described as another gentleman adventurer, referred to him as a man of unexampled justice, honor, and delicacy.
The last family member walks up to him and is like, "I want to learn to do street magic." And he's like, "It's over. We're done. You're not doing this to my lineage."
Yep. And, you know, at this point, I mean, he's just thinking, what is the shocking discovery? And he's like, you know what? It's just He just saw and just had like this moment where it was like he saw whatever acts the family had committed. Maybe it was, oh, he saw that they were murderers, or maybe, yeah, you know, these people were into some, you know, debauchery, you know, a lot of drinking, a lot of wild, and maybe they let some ladies of the night into the priory. Who knows?
That seems a little tame to become a,
yeah,
family destroyer.
Yeah, but you're not thinking, this guy is not thinking of what happens later on.
I hear you. I'm just saying it's a little more than just like, oh, you guys are drunks.
Who knows?
He's not like four servants. Let's go.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Maybe he was a very scholarly type. A lot of this.
Yeah, you know? But even a lot of that.
And then he sees, like, what if he goes down there and there's like an orgy and Darude Sandstorm is playing? He's like, no, no, no. And then he just has to wipe him out.
First of all, you go in that room.
Well, me.
Yeah, every time.
Hit us with that right here. Yeah, that's what's playing when he finds out all the stuff is going on.
Yeah, this has become
that's
a
devil
very,
music back in the 1200s or whatever the fuck
this has become
is.
A very scholarly podcast.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of pushing our glasses up right now.
Pushing these glasses up.
Yeah, the mention of Darude Sandstorm is literary brilliance.
So, he moves in. All right? Our boy Graham moves in.
Graham's in.
Seven servants, 9 cats. That's a detail that only Lovecraft would put in a story.
Yeah, because you kind of already get what's going on here, you know?
Yeah, kind of.
He's like, oof. He's like, not enough cats. I need 2 more cats.
Yeah. They're like, 7 servants, 7 cats, Howard? He's like, no. Yeah. The felines must outnumber the people.
9 cats.
Yeah, it's like, all right, okay, all right.
Black Tom and 8 others.
Right. So he moves in. First 5 days, great. Amazing. Nothing happens.
Having the time of his life.
A hum-diddly-do of a good time. In his new ancestral estate, newly renovated.
So Roger Barrymore with his cigarette holder.
Ascot.
Yeah, ascot.
Smoking jacket.
Yeah.
Slippers. Yeah. So
he's Lucky from Casino at this point.
Yeah.
Or Ace, I'm sorry, Ace Lucky. Ace from Casino.
Oh, Ace, yes. Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I want equal amount of blueberries in every muffin.
Yeah.
All right, we're losing the script. So on July 22nd.
Cut that.
You can leave it all in.
All right.
I don't care. This is a fun podcast.
Yeah. I wonder what S.T. Joshi would say about all this.
We'll ask him when we have him on because it's happening.
Okay.
On July 22nd, the first incident. All right. He's in bed, and he hears the sound of what can only be described as hundreds or maybe even thousands of rats behind the walls. And that's a very specific sound. You know what I mean? Because, like, you hear...
It's like... But it's also like...
Yeah. And there's, like, a tittering and, like, a slithering and, like, a...
Because the tails are whipping, too, with the little claws.
Yeah.
You hear little...
It's awful.
That was my attempt at a rat.
Right. He hears it, and clearly Black Tom hears it. and he's running around like he's the cat's going berserk, and he's really puzzled because this building is a masonry construction. They're not hollow walls.
Yeah, he's like, I thought this was all limestone beyond
and,
this.
Right. And he can even perceive that it's like the rats are moving up, and then they seem to be moving down. And the cat's... Black Tom and all the other cats are—they're going berserk. They're trying to get in between the walls. They tell him he's pawing at stuff, going berserk.
Later on, he has a really fun when they get closer to the end. I love what he says about Black Tom being like something. He's like a something hunter, and you could picture how a hunter is when. He's like, what's his name from Jumanji?
Ooh, okay. That guy who plays the hunter. He is the first Baron of Exum.
Okay.
Gold Tooth. Ice.
Bodo.
Exactly.
Yep. That's our, that song, Lap Dance, that's for any,
any baller.
Yeah, any baller that's big time.
So all the Delapores, the original ones from England, that's their theme song when they come into the orgy or whatever's going on?
Yep.
And then someone just disrobes them. It's just chains and, you know. You know what happened, folks, especially if you already read this.
Yeah.
So it happens, goes back to sleep. Next night, same thing starts to occur, but the tapestry on the wall moves a little bit.
Mm.
And he don't like it.
I wouldn't either at this point.
Morning, questions all the servants, right? And he found that none of them had noticed anything unusual, except for one of the cooks remembers that their cat, who usually rests on the windowsill, was acting a little weird. All right.
Because everyone gets a cat.
You get a cat. Next day, he tells Norris about it, and he seems very interested in this. He's like, all right, well, let me know. You know, let me know what happens. He was up all night, so after he tells Norris about this, he called him. He goes to sleep early and has an insane dream. We'll let Howard take care of this one.
I retired early, being very sleepy, but was harassed by dreams of the most horrible sort. I seemed to be looking down from an immense height upon a twilit grotto, knee deep with filth, where a white-bearded demon swineherd drove about with his staff a flock of fungus, flabby beasts whose appearance filled me with unutterable loathing. Then, as the swineherd paused and nodded over his task, a mighty swarm of rats rained down on the stinking abyss and fell to devouring beasts and man alike.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Flabby man beasts.
Mm-hmm. We'll get there.
Sounds like the Eggman from that one castle.
Oh. Okay.
But what castle was that?
But that wasn't Chillingham.
Was not Chillingham, no.
We always go to that.
Let's just say
Lep Castle.
It might be Lep Castle, because the rumors of the Flabby Eggman.
The Flabby Eggman. Yeah, what one was that?
It might be Lep Castle.
That could. We'll report back, folks.
Yeah,
we won't.
Hey, shut up.
So he wakes up from this, because that's how you wake up from that dream.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That was super.
When you see a flock of fungus, flabby beasts, with a swineherd who's got his nice white beard and he's got his staff and he's just like, awful. You know what these things look like in my mind? Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. That story where the person with the dog, but it's like some, like, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, that's the one.
There's also another one, too, that it could be, but it's in between the chapters. It's not, like, in a story.
Right.
But I know the one you're talking about. We'll go with that.
Okay. So he wakes up. he's freaked out, and he wakes up to Black Tom freaking out, and the tapestry is, like, moving this time. He's like, oh, my God. So he picks up, he has, like a they call it a blanket warmer. It's, like, this thing they used to put, it was, like, a pan, had coals in it, kept them warm in the castle. He pokes it, and it falls, the tapestry, and it's just a wall there. Fucking losing it.
Or ghosts.
Or ghosts. Nothing can be discounted in this story.
No feet. Ghosts.
Right, right. He can't go back to sleep, so he goes back downstairs, all while still hearing the rats behind the walls. And he follows Black Tom down the stairs and then down to this other area where there's a sub-basement, and it's a door that leads to a crypt. And Black Tom is, like, you know, digging. He wants to get in there. But this is a crypt down there, and it's the middle of the night. And you could tell he's like, I will explore this later.
Yeah. I will come back with forces.
Yes. And then, interestingly, he notices that all the rat traps that he laid out, they're all sprung, but there's nothing caught in them.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So at this point, my first assumption when we do the new, I guess, what the next story is about.
Yes.
Thoughts in his brain, the rats in the walls.
Yeah.
That was kind of accurate here at that point, because he's...
Yeah.
He's just hearing shit.
Yeah.
Continue.
Thank you.
Can I keep you? That's it.
So, after this happens, he calls up Captain Norris again, comes over, and they decide they're going to just explore this sub-cellar, right? They don't find anything gross or strange, other than the fact that this is a vault built by Roman hands, which, that's awesome.
And then, takes time to mention, he's like, we were just in awe.
Yeah.
You know, we're even seeing the inscriptions and everything on there.
Yeah, like historical graffiti and stuff. And even mentions that this was Roman, no debased Romanesque of the bungling Saxons. It's like, Jesus, Howard.
Stupid Saxons.
I'd be like, oh yeah, Howard, what do the houses look like that you built?
Yeah.
I've never built...
Exactly. I've built houses of dreams.
I've built entire cities.
Yes. With my mind and these two hands.
Please read Salathius. Nobody wants to read that, Howard. Especially not Ken.
Yeah. Oh. I'd set that story on fire, like my man taking out the rest of the family. That's how I'd do it.
Oh yeah, I know you love the dream stories.
That's how it would be. I'd walk in a room and it would just be that story.
Yeah.
And I'd gather the four servants. We'd kill that story.
Okay. Collect everyone that's been printed.
Yep.
I gotcha. Okay. So they're talking about all the graffiti they find down there, all these partial inscriptions. It's great. They love it.
They're having a bro moment down there.
Oh, dude, I love it. This is the fair part. They're down there, and like, you know what? Have the servants bring down some couches. I read that and actually LOL'd. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Could you imagine that order? Theodore.
Yeah. Are you enjoying your cat? Good. Couches? Two.
Yeah, two. I think I could get your check too. sorry.
It's okay.
Now this vault that they're hanging out and having their bro moment on their, you know, very ornate couches.
Yeah.
These are not regular.
They're probably not even comfortable.
No.
They're just like,
they're old leather and wood.
He's like, this is delightful.
Yeah. Tea? Are they having tea down there?
Probably. They're probably partaking in some wine.
You think?
Or, you know, or whatever they have.
Tea.
These
guys?
Oh, you don't think they little spot of the little hair of the dog?
The guy, Graham, is having tea. Norris is having beer.
Yeah, because he's a soldier.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's totally drinking.
Totally. The plump Captain Norris. So they're hanging out down there, and they make mention that this vault is like very deep in the foundations of the priory. Like they're like, this has to be the bottom. This is the bottom. This is it, man. Look at it. Here's the Roman foundations. This is it, man. And they decide they're going to hang out to see if the rats do come back, because you know, Norris hasn't heard it. He's just been told by Delapore here that he's heard it.
I loved this because this is kind of like the part of the story where like it's almost like the ghost hunt. Yeah, like, let's sit down and see what happens. It's almost like in Poltergeist when she starts, you know, messing with Carol Ann on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, it's kind of fun at this point.
Yeah, but they're actually poking the bear, and that's the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. They fall asleep. I'm sorry, Delapore falls asleep. Norris just hangs out like a good servant would or something.
Yeah.
And he has another crazy dream, and he wakes up horrified once again. I'm not going to do it.
That was perfect time you're going to get me when I was taking a swig.
I didn't want you to spit all over it. Wakes up horrified when in his dreams he says that he sees one of these fungus flabby beasts up close.
Me no likey.
No, not at all. And neither does him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he don't like it. So as this is going on, you know, and they said that Norris kind of chuckles at him, like, oh, there's nothing wrong. You're fine, buddy. What? Black Tom's going berserk. And he starts clawing frantically around the bottom of this large, like, stone altar that's in the center of the room. And
those are never good.
No. And Norris kind of crouches down, starts to, like, scratch at it. Like, what is this? You know, like, looking at the bottom. Like, they can't kind of figure it out. A lot of batting around. And as he's bending down, he has his candle, and he's looking down, and he notices when Norris has crouched down to it, there's just a little bit of draft coming out.
Un poquito.
Little low.
Un poquito.
A little bit of draft is coming out of the bottom of this thing. So they're like, oh, where's that coming from?
Yeah.
And
then all of a sudden a hand comes out.
What's great about this part is that, oh, there's stuff below this. So the next line he literally is, we spent the rest of the night in the brilliantly lighted study. They get scared.
Yeah, and they're just hanging out in the study now.
Like, hey, you want to figure this out upstairs?
Yeah.
Let the servants bring the couches back up?
Hey, guys, you guys try those couches?
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah, it's all good. And they start discussing what they should do next. The discovery that there's another vault below this is, you know, too, like, tempting to not check out. They have to check this out.
Right.
But because of the age of this building, this priory, they want to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Enter the montage of recruiting now.
Exactly what I have in my notes. Montage scene right here.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Nice.
They decide to go to London and assemble a team, and then we get the montage.
Yeah.
We'll let Howard tell us what happens.
During many days in London, Captain Norris and I presented our facts, conjectures, and legendary anecdotes to five eminent authorities. All men who could be trusted to respect any family disclosures which future explorations might develop. We found most of them little disposed to scoff, but instead intensely interested and sincerely sympathetic. It is hardly necessary to name them all, but I may say that they included Sir William Brinton, whose excavations in the Troad excited most of the world in their day.
So they got the crew.
Yep.
The squad is ready.
You got your grizzled explorer.
Yep.
You got your scientist.
A psychic?
Psychic. What is he? A psychic?
Just a psychic.
Just a psychic?
Yeah, and he makes fun of him in the story.
Yeah. Does he faint a couple times?
So on the evening of August 7th, they all the crew.
He's just,
yeah, exactly. I see a body.
not over here.
On the evening of August 7th, they returned to Exham Priory, and he asked the servants. They said nothing happened at all, nothing unusual. Even Black Tom, fine, nothing wrong. And there it is, man. Nothing's happening. It's like at this point, you're like, oh, is he causing it?
Right.
You know.
Much like they think a teenage girl going through puberty causes poltergeists.
Sure. Or whatever. And he says that they get home and then he says that sleep came quickly, but hideous dreams assailed me. He talks about dreaming about a Roman feast with a horror in a covered platter. So the feast scene from Temple of Doom.
Right.
But it's people. and then once again, he has the demon swine herd, you know, nasty fungus thing in the Twilight Grotto thing again. Has the same thing. Wakes up next morning, 11 a.m. It's go time.
How did he wake up? Oh, shit.
That morning, he was just like, So 11 a.m., they're ready to go. And as soon as they get down there, everyone's checking out that altar that the breeze came out of, the little draft. And our boy, Billy B., cracks it right away. And he says that it was some kind of, like, unknown counter, like, species of counterweight that no one had ever seen before. But this guy had experience with this kind of stuff because he's an archaeologist. So he figures it out and just does, like, a counterweight thing. Thing just moves. And it's like Legend of Zelda music happens. And there it opens. And there's this, you know, there's this square opening in this tiled floor. And there's a flight of stone steps that he talks about, that it's so worn down that it's basically just an incline, because it's like thousands of years of people just going up and down these steps. And there's this, as soon as they get there, there's bones. There's human bones, semi-human bones, a concoction of skeletons, apparently. And he said, by the way that they're laying, that they show these attitudes of like panic and fear, like something happened here. And all over them were marks that rodents had gnawed at them. So it's like, okay, maybe this is evidence of that great...
Yeah, maybe there are rats.
Well, this is the evidence of what happened when the rats came out all those centuries ago. These are all these things that were caught in its wake. And he even says that the skulls, he says specifically, denoted nothing short of utter idiocy, cretinism, and primitive semi-apedom.
That's a whole lot of insults right there.
Yep. And then above the steps arched this descending passage, and it was seemingly chiseled from the solid rock, and it was conducting a current of air, which is kind of interesting. And it wasn't this, like, you know, gross thing you would think to come from, like, a closed vault. It was actually cool breeze with some freshness in it. So obviously it was coming from these fissures in the rock wall, because the sea is right there.
Yeah.
So they figured out a way to, like, air this out, because... And that also explains why people were smelling these weird smells, whatever was going on in this room.
Yeah, because it's blowing things from the cracks.
Yeah. So they didn't stay long because they could see that there was more to see. So, like, you know, they made some notes, but they're like, well, we'll come back, but we, you know, let's move on. But Sir William... examines that the walls made... He made the observation that the with the direction of the strokes must have been chiseled from beneath.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. It's like... I mean, I guess we could talk about that at the end, but something was working on this from the inside out.
Yeah, here's where I'm getting... Like, I'm like...
Yeah, this is where it gets weird, because we've been here before. Narrator, he's telling us this story. And actually, it's funny, because the next line is, I must be very deliberate now and choose my words.
Yeah.
Because we're at the point where this guy is, he's losing it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's a 100% unreliable narrator, but he's certainly not all there. And it's like, almost like the descent that's happening here is like, it's a descent into madness at the same time. You know, it's like, it mirrors it, right? So they descend lower, and then we get the scene where it's like everyone gasps at this sight that we're not told of yet. And, of course, the psychic investigator faints. that's Howard taking a dig.
Yeah.
And we get this next passage.
It was a twilit grotto of enormous height, stretching away farther than any eye could see. A subterraneous world of limitless mystery and horrible suggestion. There were buildings and other architectural remains. In one terrified glance, I saw a weird pattern of tumuli, a savage circle of monoliths, a low-domed Roman ruin, a sprawling Saxon pile, and an early English edifice of wood. But all these were dwarfed by the ghoulish spectacle presented by the general surface of the ground. For yards about the steps extended an insane tangle of human bones, or bones at least as human as those on the steps. Like a foamy sea, they stretched, some fallen apart, but others wholly or partly articulated as skeletons. These latter invariably in postures of demonic frenzy, either fighting off some menace or clutching off some menace, or clutching off the forms with cannibal intent.
dude.
Okay. So that's not just from the rats. We know that.
Well, the buildings aren't, but the litter of bones are.
They're all from the rats?
From that time when the rats came out.
Yeah, but I mean...
They were the leftovers. These are the bodies.
Right, but the rats came out.
Uh-huh.
How did they get out if it was sealed? And well, it was chiseled from the way out.
Well, they found their way out somewhere. They could have came through the cracks. The rats, from what I'm guessing, they did find their way. I mean, we're not even to that part yet, but they found their way somehow.
All right.
But the view that they're seeing right now, it reminds me of pictures of the Paris catacombs where you just have like those just pits of just bones everywhere. It's like, and they're like pits of bones.
Yeah, but isn't it like it's a big...
Oh, yeah, but I'm just talking about how the ground looks. It's just bone. They're walking over bones. It's the beginning of Terminator 2. they can't even really grasp it because it's every time, everywhere they look, it's just more just horrific things. He calls it gothically grotesque. Revelation after revelation, just thinking of what could have taken place down here for the last even just 300 years or 1,000 years or 2,000 years or even 10,000 years ago, as he says. Mm-hmm. He calls it the antechamber of hell. Like this, he can't even imagine what kind of things went on down here. And that it was going on for, you know, something like 20 generations. And that the one guy, Trask, who's the anthropologist, tells about the skeleton things must have descended as quadrupeds during the last few generations.
Yeah.
So it's like they've been, whatever these things are, had been down here so long and been kept as cattle for so long that they, like, devolved. And they were now moving around on all fours.
Oh, God.
Got him.
Yeah, but and also, too, it's like... I'll wait for the end.
So they talk about these quadruped things with their occasional biped ones had been kept in these stone pens, which they must have broken out in that last, which he says, this delirium of hunger or rat fear when they break out.
Yeah.
And there were great herds of them. And he comes to the conclusion that it was they were fattened on the coarse vegetables whose remains could still be found as sort of a poison.
It's like a big rotten patch of just old vegetables.
It's still there. I mean, they could still see it. So now he knew why his ancestors had made these excessive gardens around the area. This was what they were feeding the cattle, these things. and at this point, he even says, I didn't have to think of what the purpose of the herds were at this point. He gets it now. We also get a little part here where he tells us about... They find this Elizabethan era building that was a butcher shop. So right back, I'm thinking a picture in the house.
Yep.
and he talks about how there's also like this. He finds a row of 10 stone cells with rusty bars, three of which have skeletons in it. Some are like high graded people. Some are like these degraded people. One of the four fingers has his coat of arms on it, so that must be one of the guys that didn't want to go with the program. Mm-hmm. A vault with older cells below this Roman chapel, but those were empty. And then below another crypt were cases of formerly arranged bones, some of them bearing terrible inscriptions carved in Latin, Greek, and other languages. They opened up this prehistoric tumuli, which is a tomb, I guess, and brought to light skulls, which were slightly more human than a gorilla's and which bore indecipherable ideographic carvings. So that's like caveman stuff. So stuff's been going on here forever.
So, I don't want to jump the gun and ask the question. Okay.
Well, we're almost there. So, there's a line that comes up here, which also I think speaks to his mental state at this point, because he goes, through all this horror, my cat stalked unperturbed. Once I saw him monstrously perched atop a mountain of bones and wondered at the secrets that might be behind his yellow eyes. He's dissociating. He's in the middle of all this horror, and he's like, oh, what's my cat thinking about, I wonder? It's like, damn. Because he's putting it together. It's in there. And he's like, oh, I don't want to think about it. Oh, what's my cat doing?
Yeah. Come here.
Yeah.
Black Tom.
Yep. We got another passage.
Having grasped to some slight degree the frightful revelations of this twilit area, an area so hideously foreshadowed by my recurrent dream. We turned to that apparently boundless depth of midnight cavern where no ray of light from the cliff could penetrate. We shall never know what sightless Stygian worlds yawn beyond the little distance we went, for it was decided that such secrets are not good for mankind. But there was plenty to engross us close at hand, for we had not gone far before the searchlights shewed that accursed infinity of pits in which the rats had feasted, and whose sudden lack of replenishment had driven the ravenous rodent army first to turn on the living herds of starving things, and then to burst forth from the priory in that historic orgy of devastation which the peasants will never forget.
So when his ancestor killed the rest of the family...
Walter, yeah.
When Walter killed the family,
yep,
they were all trapped down there and they weren't feeding him anymore.
Right.
Them, these flabby egg people, are they the other family members?
No.
What are they?
They were taking people from time. They were from.
So these are just people they take and breed them down there?
Yes. They had them down there forever.
Right.
So whoever was doing this was doing it forever, and they've been doing it so long and been keeping the peasants as cattle for so long that they had devolved into these weird cattle things
and
that they are eating.
But they're—I know they're eating. I get that, but they're mating them too. Like,
yeah, they seem to be mating to swell their herds. So they have some that are bipedal and some that are quadrupedal. So when they capture people, some of them they're obviously making them go down there.
That's a wire that was crossed for me.
Okay.
I was going, wait. Are they is it the family that's keeping the family members down there?
No.
Okay. They were kidnapping,
yeah,
taking peasants out of the villagers, hated them, but they also were down there so long,
yeah,
and so old that it might not even be them taking modern people.
Right.
This is just an ancient breed of, like, creatures,
yeah,
they created,
yeah,
as cattle that were people,
yeah,
that devolved into just, you know, veal, basically.
Yes.
They were veal.
Yeah. Chicken without beaks and wings. No feathers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then, after all the starving,
yeah,
and all the, you know, they break out in hunger, this and that, they're all,
yep,
dying.
Yep.
They're trying to claw their way out.
They eat all of them. They're satiated. And then the next round, there's nothing down there. So maybe they chewed on some bones and stuff, but now they're like, there's nothing there. And those huge deep pits that they're talking about were filled with rats at one time.
Right.
And at that point, because there's nothing to eat, they were forced to break out. And,
yeah,
that's when they spill out of the priory.
Okay.
Got it.
One or two wires crossed.
All good.
There.
Hey man, this is a dense.
It is, because he goes into so many descriptions, and I'm like, I always try to, like, okay, what's the monster? What's the scary?
Yeah.
But there is so much here, because it's not just like those creatures that are down there.
Yeah.
That's a horror on its own.
Yeah.
But then there's a spooky family
that's been keeping it going.
Yeah, keeping it going since.
Yeah.
Since Caesar.
Or before.
Nor before.
Mostly, well, definitely before.
And there's some, like, rituals they do with, like, worshipping some old goddess.
Yeah, because if you think about it, like, okay.
What the hell?
If you think about it, so the original level, they built this, this crypt or whatever, but that was clearly, like, a worshipping spot, and that was the secret entrance before anything was built above it. And they would go down there, and they've been keeping people there as cattle forever.
Mm-hmm.
So this is that's a line of itself down there. That's a genealogical line down there that's,
yeah,
all gross.
Yeah, and then down there were, like, buildings and all kinds of stuff, because, like, maybe,
yeah,
at one point they also lived down there because,
yeah,
they had the butcher shop.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, like, it was like an English kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so they would come down there and do their thing. There was a whole theme park.
Yeah.
It was a cannibal theme park.
Yeah. This sucks.
Yeah. And you also assume that after the rats got out, I'm not sure where he's going specifically with the chiseling. In my mind, I think those things, the ones that were not completely devolved, chiseled their way out, and maybe some of them were still human, and they made their way out, and we'll get to what that is.
And maybe that's when one of them got stomped on by the horse.
Well, I think some of them probably escaped anyway sometimes. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's you
they're
know.
Like, yeah, because they're all slippery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're trying to, like,
they all look like the baby from Men in Black.
Yeah, yeah. Or if, I don't think you played The Witcher 3.
No, I haven't played it.
Yeah, there's a thing in there that's like this.
Perfect. So, shit's about to hit the fan. You ready?
It just got that connection made now, it's so heavy.
Yeah.
I feel gross.
Oh, yeah. Oh, oh yeah. Slimy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a mucky sound. Yeah. Like you're mixing mac and cheese.
I'm trying to think of this. Oh. I'm trying to think of the sound that these things make, though.
Like a...
Maybe even more of like a...
Yeah, with a little lamb in there.
You know, just like...
Yeah, they're like people up at the surface like, what the fuck is that?
Is that goats? Is that lamb? You're like... That was another room that he walked in on.
Right, they're like, oh, no, they were fucking those things. Yeah. Not sheep, those things, yeah.
That's how they were keeping it going.
That's how Walter was like, nope, that's what he found. He's like, nope, done.
He's like, eating them's one thing.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. All right, so now let's get to the...
You have derailed.
Yes, we have derailed, but this is the Derailed Podcast.
Yeah.
So... He goes on after he gets us, you know, tells us about all this, you know, gets the revelation about the rats. He says that his foot slipped near one of these brinks near this pit, and he had this weird moment of like ecstatic fear, he calls it. And he says he must have been musing a long time because he could only see the plump Captain Norris. And I'm sorry, but we have to do more passages because the way that he puts this together.
Then there came a sound from that inky, boundless, farther distance that I thought I knew. And I saw my old black cat dart past me like a winged Egyptian god, straight into the illimitable gulf of the unknown. But I was not far behind. There was no doubt after another second. It was the eldritch scurrying of those fiend-born rats, always questing for new horrors, and determined to lead me on even unto those grinning caverns of Earth's center, where Nyarlathotep, the mad faceless god, howls blindly to the piping of two amorphous idiot flute players.
We know that name.
Yeah, the embodiment of fear. Fear manifests, right?
Cosmic.
Cosmic fear.
Like the fear of the cosmic and the emptiness of the vast cosmos. But kind of given a different description here a little bit, right?
Yeah, the faceless god of...
Right. So this is Lovecraft... He's still developing his pantheon and the cosmology of it all, right? And in this spot here, he's using Nyarlathotep instead of what will later be Azathoth's description.
Okay. Right?
And still, he hasn't had his big revelation yet, and he will soon, but he's still, it's the center of the Earth instead of the center of the universe of, like, ultimate chaos. Mm-hmm. He's still digging in the Earth looking for the ultimate... Horror.
He sure is digging in the earth
now. We dig in the earth quite a bit in these stories.
I'm feeling Nathalietop's presence right now.
Yeah, he might be around.
I feel gross.
I've heard that cat can ball. Sorry.
That cat can ball.
So for him, at this point, Lovecraft, this is not the story, but this is just behind the thing. I think for him... It's the center of the earth that scares the shit out of him. Like, oh, is there a level below? A level below? Yeah. Like, what? Like, and you get so deep because where are we? Like, the Nameless City, remember? It's like he talks about, like, descending for hours. Yeah. That time melted away because he'd been doing it for so long. There's something about that deepness that gets him. And now he's saying, oh, well, at the center of the earth is Nyarlathotep, the mad faceless god. And he howls blindly to the piping of two amorphous idiot flute players. It's almost just that, like, the center of ultimate chaos is this unknowable, horrific thing. And I think he throws it in here because the name is like, whoa, what the fuck is that, if you're reading the story?
Yeah.
And what do you mean, the mad faceless god? It's almost like he puts it in there as, like, just a thing to scare you. It's like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And then he just moves on.
Right, because then you start thinking about that name.
Yeah.
And you may even go to your local library.
Yeah.
You maybe ask a teacher.
Yeah.
What is that for Lyotep?
Yeah. You might consult Ray's Occult Books.
Yeah. Tobin Spirit Guide.
Call him up.
You know, Spate's Catalog.
Yeah. Any of that. He's in all of it. So.
Now I'm thinking about that story.
But
these are different versions of that,
so it's
right?
Different versions, but then again, it still gels because he's the god of a thousand forms.
Okay.
We'll get there, bro. It's just meant to make your mind continually wheel.
Exactly.
And it's
that's
working.
That's what causes panic attacks.
Yeah, yeah. He's on it.
Yeah. Yeah, fuck you guys, man.
Yeah. So here's where shit hits the fan.
We just hit the record number of curses in this podcast.
Did we?
Yeah.
How do you know?
That was four. It was four fucks. Five now.
Oh, you've been counting?
We've only had two at most in every episode.
Oh, it tells you.
No, I know.
Oh, you know. Okay. All right.
Because we've been trying to tone it down with the F-bombs.
Well, folks, we've made a concerted effort to keep it scholarly in the beginning, but it gets a little stuffy. So,
yeah.
We're, you know, trying to have fun a little bit.
Yeah.
If you don't like the fucks, I'm sorry.
I apologize as well. Also, parental discretion is...
It's already going to be on there.
Well, I'm just saying.
Oh, okay.
In general.
No one's going to ever see this because we mentioned the Grove, and they're just going to just bury this episode.
Ah, you're right. You're right.
All right, so shit hits the fan, Ken, and we get this passage, which I guess we'll leave it. We'll leave it for Howard to read.
My searchlight expired, but still I ran. I heard voices and yowls and echoes, but above all, there gently rose that impious, insidious scurrying. Gently rising as a stiff, bloated corpse gently rises above an oily river that flows under endless onyx bridges to a black, putrid sea. Something bumped into me, something soft and plump. It must have been the rats, the viscous, gelatinous, ravenous army that feast on the dead and the living. Why shouldn't rats eat a delapoyer as a delapoyer eats forbidden things? The war ate my boy. Damn them all. And the Yanks ate Carfax with flames and burnt grandsire Delapore and the secret. No, I tell you, I am not that demon swineherd in the twilight grotto. It was not Edward Norris' fat face on that flabby fungus thing. Who says I am a Delapore, he lived, but my boy died. Chalanoris hold the lands of a Delapore. It's voodoo, I tell you. That spotted snake. Curse you, Thornton. I'll teach you to faint at what my family do. Then, blood. Thou stinkard. I'll learn you how to guss. Donis's dolus ort, agus leet. Sa.
So whatever that sounds, yeah. whatever the AI spits in.
Yeah, we'll see.
Holy shit!
So he just went nuts.
Yes, but he almost descended through language through all the levels, kind of. If you think about it, the levels of the Priory.
Yeah, then you get down to the pig people.
Yeah.
So wait. Now, something bumped into him, so is there another one of those things still alive down there? Or is it just he bumped into...
Oh.
What's his name?
Oh, they let us know.
Okay, but that's what that connection was. Okay. Dude, it's a lot here. Oh,
It's fine. Read Lovecraft.
That was natural, by the way.
Yeah.
I didn't even mean to go into that. I'm sorry.
No, man. This is great. I'm glad it's getting to you. It shows you the power of this stuff. So...
God damn it.
So what we just heard,
yeah.
He says, that is what they say I said when they found me in the blackness after 3 hours. And he says, found me crouching in the blackness over the plump, half-eaten body of Captain Norris, with my own cat leaping and tearing at my throat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, Black Tom was trying to save somebody there.
The monstrousness he was trying to get at. Wasn't rats.
Yeah, it was in him the whole time.
Yeah, he just had to descend lower.
Yeah,
here and physically.
Yeah.
To get to it. So they've blown it up. They've blown up Exham Priory. They've taken Black Tom from him. Poor thing. And they shut him up in this this barred room, so an insane asylum, right? And you know, he says that there's these fearful whispers about his hereditary experiences. He's already, they're like, oh, he's a Delapore. So it still persists today. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, of course. Thornton, one of the other characters, was Thornton the psychic? I think it was, right?
The one that fainted. Who was the quote that he said, teach you to faint at what my family do?
Oh yeah, right.
That's the psychic.
Thornton, yeah. Okay. So Thornton, also weak-willed, is also there because he went mad from what he saw. Because he fainted twice.
Yeah.
And then he sees this. But he's in the next room, and they won't let him talk to him. More like they don't want him to try to eat him.
Yeah.
And they're trying to suppress this whole story.
Yeah, they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah. So we come to the end of the story here.
Pig cattle, man, pig cattle.
Man, bear, pig, cattle. Last passage, end of the story.
When I speak of poor Norris, they accuse me of a hideous thing, but they must know that I did not do it. They must know it was the rats. The slithering, scurrying rats whose scampering will never let me sleep. The demon rats that race behind the padding in this room and beckon me down to greater horrors than I have ever known. The rats they can never hear. The rats in the walls.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's why we do this podcast, so I can...
So you can digest it.
I can understand.
Yeah, we laid out.
This was the biggest one, I think. I mean, not chapter-wise or anything. This is one of the longer ones, and this is the most meaty, because, like, even with Reanimator, there's, what, it's 6 chapters?
Yeah.
Right? And they're concise, and everything's written very specific.
Yeah. And it's punchy.
It's got punchy, yeah. This one, it's just, like, him doing that whole, like, and the devil's of first. He has, like, a cadence that he goes through in this.
Yeah.
When he starts describing things.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I got caught up in that and I lost it. And that's when I was like, wait, is the pig eyes one there? Then I immediately was like, oh, wait, no, it's Norris.
Yeah.
That was just, he put that in there and that's the descent. He starts going crazy and starts spinning that.
Yeah.
And then he gets to the part where he starts, that's the garls and gnashing at the end.
Yeah.
So it's him thinking that going and then he starts eating a human.
Yes.
That's the descent in that, in the.
Yeah.
Quote.
And he's eating the human when he gets to the bottom too, because it's almost like when the language degrades, but then he also gets to, it's just bestial.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, it's complete, you know,
hierarchy of, you know,
mental
brain
processes.
Functions.
Yeah,
your brain functions.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. He's in an insane asylum now. He's not going to escape or anything.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the guy. I'm not a flabby egg man, you know.
That's wild, though, that, like...
You want some, Graham?
Yeah.
Get some.
But it's wild because, you know, the Norris family, they're, before this, they were taking care of, you know, the Exham Priory. They even said Norris's uncle was the owner. So somewhere in there, it's almost like that Lovecraft does this, where it's like, you have these genealogies, but, like, these prejudices and these, like, these inclinations and these things are in there too.
Yeah.
So it was almost like he, like, low key hated him already.
Yeah.
And he was like, and so when he let loose, there's a Norris who they kind of, I mean, I think he even more than suggests that one of his ancestors climbed out of that fucking crypt.
Yeah.
And became human again.
Right.
You know? Because
of the pudgy.
Yeah. Why mention how pale and pudgy he is?
God damn it. That's, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Fuck.
And then it further pisses him off that...
Sorry, this is a high swearing episode for
me. No,
I'm sorry.
Hey, this is great stuff. So, and I think he's also further pissed because his son dies, but the Norris lives.
I love that turn of phrase there.
Yeah.
When he said, you know...
The war ate my boy.
Yeah, but before that, when he's like, we eat things that, you know, we're not supposed to.
Yeah.
The war ate my boy. Like, right there, it's a weird cross of, like... We eat things we're not supposed to, but the world and itself eats things it's not supposed to.
Yeah.
So that was like a turn of like, it did it to me, I'm going to do it to it. Like, it's a way of taking control of the madness that is existence.
Yeah.
And like, eating this person gave him power again at that moment.
Right. Yeah.
We should probably eat some.
Hey, it's Delco. We could probably find some fungus flabby beasts.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's wild. And you also get the whole thing of, like, you know, that image of the demon swineherd, you know, nodding over his work, you know, and that's kind of showing you that's his ancestors, like, specifically. It's like, you know, they were, you know, and they seemed to enjoy it. I mean, there was the whole thing of, like, they would get together and probably, you know, mix together, like, sexual rites and, like, weird shit and bonfires and feasts. But at the bottom of it all, the real horror of it was, like, worse than cannibalism was that they were keeping people for generations and generations and made them devolve into these pig egg things.
Yeah, just for the illicit purpose of eating and probably using for, you know, like you said, sexual
assault. Whatever they're doing with it. And that's the core of it, because it's like, you could tell that they enjoyed that thought. That they're like, they're sitting there, like, probably presiding over some bullshit, and they're like, yeah, you know what, I got some pig people down there that I'm going to just ruin later.
You know, I'm starting to think that it wasn't the high school S in that envelope.
No, I don't think it was either. But they were of the side that left, so they're like, stay away from England.
Because yeah,
that couple, I mean, generations that was in the United States before our boy Graham goes back, he didn't have the letter to say, don't go back to England. It's nothing, but it's folly. Don't go back to England. I'm sure it wasn't even, like, put out. They were bad. They were evil. Don't go back there.
It's a crude drawing of, like, a pig person. It's like two circles.
It's a guy behind a pig. And then a plate.
Yeah.
It's a flip book in there. A 15th century flip book.
Yeah, and he's
on parchment. It's like, wait, what? Wait, what? What? He's no. Like,
why is
Margaret,
this,
look at this.
Yeah. Why does this pig have a human face?
Yeah. And in the dream it had Norris's face.
Yeah.
Because. And then the rats themselves, that's the pull. It's like the ancestral pull. It's like, you are supposed to be down here. But at the same time, the rats, because rats gnaw at things, it's gnawing at his sanity and his humanity at the same time that he's there. It's like,
and it's also luring him to find that. It's his own inherent,
yeah,
whatever it was, like, kind of pulled him to,
right,
to search it. And right. Boy, oh boy, did George C. Scott and Philip Seymour Hoffman, yeah, they both got it in this
one.
Yeah.
Yep. And if you want to put your Cthulhu mythos hat on and kind of look at this stuff, then you start to think, well, what is it about this place that makes people do this? Because it clearly existed there for a long time.
Right.
And they even say, like, they only kept people in the family around who were okay with this. The ones that were like, well, this is fucked up, they would kill them. So...
Ley lines, maybe?
You could think of a lot of things. Sure. Could this be, like, because people have suggested, because they, and I know we haven't covered this character, this entity yet, but people have suggested, because they mentioned the Magna Mater, the Great Mother. That sounds like Lovecraft's entity, Shub-Niggurath, which is this, the black goat of the woods of a thousand young, that's what she's called. Ken flashed a face when I said that name. She has a very unfortunate name. Most people decide to call her just the black goat of the woods, or the black goat of the woods of a thousand young. She's this, mother, evil mother entity.
Well, one thing
we will come. We will
one thing that's
again.
Hidden in there is he mentioned monoliths.
Yeah,
and they're on the ocean, basically, right?
Yeah, but this is like below it. We're like below, but the cliff. So it's like,
well, it still lines up. I'm just saying, it could be. We could have a Dagon situation here.
Yeah, but I think that they're not. Yes, we could. We definitely could. But I think this is more. This is people, like I said, putting our Cthulhu mythos hat on. These characters don't exist yet. But him mentioning the Nyarlathotep thing, and which is basically a description of Azathoth, it's interesting, because he already wants to be like, all right, this is so messed up, there needs to be some kind of deity down here, too. And he has to. So I think that's another reason why this is such a big story for Lovecraft, because he had to put... He doesn't call them the Great Old Ones yet, but, like, he had to put a name in there. Like, it's so twisted and so black and so just at the depths of depravity that, like, it had to give it a name and had to give, like, a something. He was like, well, Nyarlathotep. Let's put
it
in there.
Man, I'll tell you what. I was reading it. I thought I had a grasp on what was going on.
Yeah.
But I also was like, I have questions.
No, that's good.
And now I'm just like... Well, I'm going to have to digest this one for a little bit.
And I think it's great that we, like, came to those revelations on air, because, you know, we've... couple listeners have reached out. They're like, hey, thanks for, like, discussing this stuff, because there's stories that I've been confused about for years.
A
couple people have said, I've been confused about this one story, and I forget which one it was. They're like, I've been confused about the story for years, and you guys cracked it for me. I was like, oh, that's awesome, because we're basically doing it for Ken, but we're recording this, so clearly it's for you guys too.
I'm at one of those. I haven't sunken into my seat like this in a long time. It's been there's been a couple episodes here and there where over here that we do it, and there was a couple other dangers at our other podcast that this has happened. Mm. I'm a little tired now. There was an emotional outburst there. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm Jay's family, so he's gotten these before, so he understands.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a little drained. I need to, you know, big guy's going to have some flavor. Recharge my batteries.
Yeah, yeah. Another just thing I want to mention about this is that this reminds me of all this talk of, because I had just watched something that involved, you know, Bohemian Grove.
Yeah.
And I had watched that right before I read this.
Yeah.
Again, I reread it. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, it's kind of the same thing.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. The revelation. And I was just like, yeah. Wow. These are themes that have been around forever. And I was just like, this is the same thing. And then I further thought, I was like, because they talk about the same kind of stuff now, that they're drinking babies' blood and that they're shapeshifters.
Yeah.
And maybe they're shapeshifters just because they've been devolved.
Yeah.
Somebody in Washington probably has one of these big people.
Yeah, they're like, you know, like whenever they need an election, they're like, let W out the cage.
Yeah.
Let him go wrong.
Yep. Or they leave him in the cage and they find the ancestral ring on his finger of a skeleton. Yeah. I don't know. It very much lined up because a lot of, you know, that gets talked about a lot these days. Clearly, we talk about it sometimes where it's, you know, the whole, you know, these elites doing all this crazy shit because they can.
Always alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Bohemian Grove, that whole thing. So yeah. It just was very, like, you know, it lined up for me.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, because I watched the same movie again. I watched it and, like, but that's always on my mind.
Yeah. Mine too.
Yeah. So it's, oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think the Grovers are doing right now?
Yeah. you ever look up at the moon and you think any of the Grovers are looking up at the moon at the same time as you? And they're just wondering where you are, maybe?
It's true, man.
Oh,
it's
man.
True.
That really, I'm not even joking. That, like, at the end there?
Yeah.
That took it out of me. Oof.
Yeah, a lot of people get, this one gets to them a lot. This is one of those stories that you hear, like, oh, people take polls. You'll be in a Lovecraft Facebook group. What story is the one that got to you the most? Rats in the Walls is almost always near the top.
Yeah, and it's weird. It's not that it's scary to me. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, of course it's scary, but it's not like I'm not like, I don't have the willies right now.
Yeah.
I have like the emotional response tiredness of going, because, you know, since
that's the noise they make.
Yeah. It's the scream of the dead.
Yeah.
But, you know, because a lot of times, like, when the wires get uncrossed from me and the machine fully powers up, you know, and everything goes through it, you get an emotional response, you get a blow up.
Yeah.
And I'm a little fried.
Once you clear the mechanism?
Like I said, gotta recharge the batteries here, but that's... Yeah. No, I love the story. It's definitely, boy, is it... It becomes a tough read.
Yeah, because... Yeah, it's gross. There's a grossness to it on many levels.
And I just said, there is so much...
Yeah, it's very dense.
It's dense and it's bigger. It's a bigger short story. So, like, literally... There's not, like, one paragraph in this where there isn't a hint of something.
Yes.
Like, if you graze over one little thing, the whole thing's shot. And that's why it's like, I have to come here and be like, tell me, Daddy.
For all the notes that I do for these episodes, this one took the longest to do the notes. Because it was, like, exactly, I'm like, well, if I don't cover this,
it
doesn't...
What was it, 10, 11 this. Passages?
11 passages for this one, yeah. So that's the most.
Your boy Kenny's going to have a fun time editing, I'll tell you what.
Good thing you don't have to do it for another and a half.
Yeah, well, it's all the same.
Yeah, it's all the same.
It's all the same.
Well, Ken, any closing thoughts on the Rats in the Walls?
Who played the psychic?
Only one person could play the psychic. Chip Coffey.
I was thinking Sam Rockwell, but all right.
Sam Rockwell could be one of the other Delaporters. You know what I'm saying?
He could. That's good. But I just love Sam Rockwell.
Okay.
No, I want to pick the psychic. Because you said the dude
from King Kong.
From King Kong, and also he's James McAvoy's dad in the movie Wanted.
Right.
He's in Valkyries and a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
Jay Baruchan.
Who's that?
The dude from Knocked Up.
Jay Baruchel?
Is that how you say it?
I hate him. He should be the psychic.
Yeah, he should.
He's the worst.
I hate that guy, too.
Yeah. Sick references, bro. It's like, he doesn't have sick references. Yeah. He doesn't have any references anymore. You've seen him in the movie.
I don't even know how to say his last name.
Exactly.
But I'd like to see him shat upon.
He's like...
Yeah. Yeah, he goes like, this is scary, and he falls.
Is he eating him? Yeah. Is he eating him?
Yeah. Oh, no! Oh, no!
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then... Someone just hits him, and then it's the third pass out.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
They're like, oh, forearm him. Yeah. He passed out again.
And then they just drop him down a hole.
Yeah.
Off a fissure or something.
Well, he's in
the middle. Oh, yeah, so the actual closing comments on this one. have an interpreter if you're going to read this for the first time. You know, like I don't like to go to like Wikipedia or like Google what actually happened in these.
Sure.
I don't like to do that.
Sure.
I wait for here. especially when we've had one or two spoilers from some listeners that have elicited a response from me.
Sure.
I take this very, you know.
Yeah, because you want these. You know,
I want this. What happened today? This is what this is all about.
Yeah.
Recording this is me, like, if I don't know exactly what's going on,
yeah,
I want to come here and have it out with someone that does know what's going on,
yeah,
to a level where you get to see me freak out,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, that's fun.
Yeah.
So, also, remember, going forward, no spoilers for Kenny Boy.
Yeah.
You know?
Don't hit Ken with any spoilers, folks.
Yeah.
Don't say, hey, when you get to this story, when this happens, say that. It's like, don't do that.
Don't do that, please.
We love you. I love that you're listening to it, but please, no spoilers. Ken, really, we really want Ken to experience this right away. One last little thing I wanted to mention, which is really, really fucking cool. We're a month off. This was published in March of 1924. So this story is 100 years old last month.
That happens here.
Yeah,
that
so we were reading this. We had this planned. Was it still March? Maybe. But we're reading this 100th anniversary of the story.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, very cool.
Very cool. You know, great story.
100-year-old story could do that to you.
Yeah, it really can. Especially within that story, they're talking about maybe even, you know, 30,000 years of a family lineage, or, you know,
yeah,
who knows how long.
Family, but just, or just people passing, the whole thing that he keys on too about like the transference, like, because what happened like with the Roman holidays, like you, like in the real world, maybe this stuff happens, but in the real experiences, you have like the Roman holidays that the Christians came in and they just overlaid. They still continued a lot of traditions.
Also, every emperor was Caesar.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, yeah. So they brought that Roman thing in there.
Yeah.
Everyone could have this shared name.
Yeah.
And they even hinted the changing name thing, too, because, you know, he
but
does.
But the core still survives, is the
right
point.
Right. Well, I'm just saying,
yeah.
That kind of stuff's in there to keep you open to those ideas.
Yeah.
All right.
So something exists at the bottom there that's powerful, evil, and it was able to keep hold of these people forever. I mean, they dynamited it, but who knows?
Yeah. Who knows?
So.
Oh, my God.
So, I think that's it. That's what's fit to print for Rats in the Walls. As always, if you are joining us on this journey, next time we will be covering a much lighter story. Still fun, different, The Unnameable.
Yeah, not going to have as much of a response with that one.
No.
Because I think I got that one pegged.
That's a fun story. I enjoy that one quite a bit. So, if you're following along, please read The Unnameable for the next episode. And that's it for Rats in the Walls, folks. Once again, we find ourselves lingering on the edge of the abyss that Lovecraft so masterfully presents. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Learning Lovecraft. I've been Jason McKittrick.
And I've been Ken James's ghost.
And we'll see you beyond the wall of sleep.